I'm going to call the City of Franklin's Plan Commission to order. Mr. Fuchs, will you please take the roll?
Commissioner Micklegg?
Here.
Commissioner Ritter?
Here.
Commissioner Haley?
Here.
Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Commissioner Bennett?
Here.
Commissioner Collar?
Here.
Please rise, join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, next item on the agenda is the minutes of Thursday, May 9th. Any questions, comments? Not, is there a motion to approve?
No move.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, 5 ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Mr. Deedle.
The first item on the agenda tonight is a special use. This was on the last Plan Commission agenda. The public hearing was held. We did receive a lot of comments, mostly in support. One individual owns a business nearby who was hoping that there'd be no adverse impacts. They're proposing to use the property for a dog obedience training, and most of the activities will be conducted inside. We are informed that they will be using the outside sometimes to let the dogs out to go to the bathroom. That is one of our conditions, that the dogs not be trained outside. There also are other conditions. Staff is recommending approval with these conditions, such as hours of operation from 8 in the morning to 8:30 at night. Again, no training outside. Some revisions to be made to the parking site plan, specifically about some parking lot clarifications. And then there are some trailers, cargo containers, presently on the site, and we are recommending that they be removed or screened. The applicant and the property owner are willing to abide by those conditions with the note that the property owner would prefer to screen rather than remove those cargo containers. So staff is recommending approval.
Any questions, comments? Do we have a recommended motion? We have a motion to recommend approval of a resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of a special use for a dog obedience and training business use upon property located at 9438 South 29th Street.
So moved.
Second. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, 5 ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Thank you for bringing your business to Franklin.
Thank you very much.
And your patience. We wish you well.
Thank you.
Item B, David Parker, Corey Weber Parker. Mr. Deedle.
There is, the property owner would wish to put a fence on their property, primarily to screen in their yard, or the fence in their yard and pool. This is in the Stonehedge subdivision, immediately adjacent to Loomis Road. There is a landscape and highway setback easement on this property. It prohibits any structures within the easement. However, so the applicant is asking for the easement to be revised to allow the placement of the fence in the easement. This has been done once before for a little further to the south last year. Similar situation, and the Plan Commission and Council, Plan Commission recommended approval and Council approved. And then also can be noted that the property immediately to the north of this property also put a fence in their backyard. So staff is recommending approval and with no special conditions.
Yeah, I guess before we start, you should all have a letter in front of you from Alderman Dan Mayer. He could not be here tonight because of another commitment, but he did write a letter in support. Says I'd read it in the record. Dear Mayor Taylor and members of the Franklin Plan Commission, please include this letter with the documentation and or discussion of the Franklin Plan Commission meeting 5-23-13 as appropriate. Purposes of this letter is to address item 3B on the agenda regarding the property at 7444 South Stonehedge Drive. Please accept this letter as my support for Mr. Parker's variance request. Request for release of landscape planting buffer restriction and highway setback line as described in the subdivision plat to allow for the installation of the fence. I believe his request is reasonable, and the fence he proposes will only add to the positive appearance and use of the property. concur with the Department of City Development staff's assessment that the variance should be allowed. The only caveat to this endorsement is that he must follow any applicable guidelines for in-ground pool enclosure safety. I had planned to be present tonight, but another commitment arose. Joel or Nick, could you please print this message for the Plan Commission, which they did. Thank you sincerely, Daniel M. Mayer, Alderman, District 2. Comments? Questions? If not, I have a second motion, and that would be a motion to recommend approval of resolution authorizing installation of a fence within the 50-foot quote, landscape planning buffer and highway setback line as described on the subdivision plat on lot 48 in Stonehead Subdivision, number 1 subdivision.
Is there a second?
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? 5 ayes, no noes. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Okay, next item on the agenda is presentation by Commissioner David Fowler, Evaluating Nature's Benefits.
I'm ready to go. Anybody, if I stand up, can you hear me?
Where's the pop?
I didn't bring the pop.
Cracker pack.
No, that was better. We could hardly see you.
That's what I want. I like to stay in the dark. I'll try to make this quick. This is a full-fledged presentation that I've been doing. I worked on this project for Earth Economics. It was done in the Middle Cedar River watershed, where this project was done. And they looked at the watershed, it's fairly large. And I left out all the slides about the Middle Cedar River. It's in Iowa, where in Wisconsin. It's a fairly large watershed. And basically, what they did there is studied the open space and took a look at some of the benefits that those natural resources provided to the Middle Cedar River watershed, to kind of come up with value on those resources. They call them ecosystem services, such as flood retention, drinking water, pollination, food production, some of these values that they have, where you might not get those if you look at the normal cost benefits, look at the property values.
Okay, excuse me. Are you here for the Architectural Review Board meeting?
No, we came because we wanted to do an addition to the house.
That's the Architectural Review Board. Down the hall.
Sorry.
I thought I was going to get an audience. I always thought.
This way? This way.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I should have told you right off the
bat.
Yeah.
These are just some of the studies they've done. This is the study they did in the Northeast. Puget Sound, they're a company, a nonprofit consulting firm based in Seattle. They've been doing work around the country. This is one they did down in Florida for the other days. Basically, what Earth Economics is talking about now, if you look at the three types of economic models that we've had in this country, we started with microeconomics, with the macroeconomics, and then we have Earth Economics. You basically have four types of capital. If you look at how microeconomics were before they had GDP, before we looked at how to measure job losses, job creation. They just basically was supply and demand. That's basically all they really looked at. When we got to macroeconomics, they started to have those measures like the gross national product, built capital, what's the value of your buildings. All that was put into this gross national product to come up with a total value of built capital. And again, when they did microeconomics, there wasn't much built capital. Most of the United States was open space. You didn't have a lot of built capital. You didn't have the freeway system. Have some of the major cities that we have. What we have now is built capital has become, and if you look at farming and agriculture, which you could also consider built capital, most of the country now is built capital. And we now are actually becoming limited on the amount of actually unused or undeveloped open space that we have. So that open space is now becoming more valuable. The other types of capital we have are social capital, capital and natural capital. I'll kind of avoid the two middle ones, but it's natural capital I'm going to focus on in the presentation today. Some of the things that we have from our open space in this undeveloped areas would be things like carbon sequestration, pollination. We have a lot of pollinators that are needed for our food supply. Fresh water supply, which is becoming highly valuable. In fact, here in Wisconsin, we sit on, I think it's almost one-fifth, one-fourth, depending on how you look at it, of the fresh water in the world. This is going to become really critical for Wisconsin and for our economic development. Next slide. Food production. Next slide. Carbon sequestration. These are some of them I think I skipped. Recreation, flood risk reduction, open space is really critical along riverways and on the coastlines to prevent flooding. So, when you look at some of these open spaces, and many times if you use the typical economic model for a cost benefit or a cost benefit ratio or determining value, you end up with a measured value, which is here, as opposed to if you start to incorporate some of these other values, which we don't have a good way of measuring that of these natural resources or these ecosystem services, so you miss out on the total value that property or land or open space may provide. You end up with only a small slice of that value. And just to give you an idea of this, and one way of looking at it is from flood reduction. Again, here, if you constructed a detention basin to make up for the lost detention that we had, this is a project that I'm familiar with. This is the detention basins that we built as part of the Mojave River, the Milwaukee County Grounds Detention Basin. If you look at what it costs to store the constructed detention for 315 million gallons, it comes out to about 31 cents per gallon of water stored. Whereas if you look at the storage that we're gaining by purchasing open space and providing that service, you're preserving and keeping that flood value at about 7.02 cents per gallon. It's a much better cost benefit to do buying up open space to prevent that from being developed and losing that flood storage as opposed to having to go back and reconstruct that storage to prevent the flooding. If you remember the 97 and 98 floods in Menominee, they hit particularly Wauwatosa and down in Milwaukee and the Menominee Valley where we had a lot of our manufacturing that was actually had to leave. I think 80 companies moved out of the Wauwatosa area or were moved out because of the damages. Again, another case study on the value of these natural resources is the town of Middlebury. This was from Irene, Hurricane Irene. There are two towns, and I'll make this pretty quick. Town of Middlebury delineated a natural floodplain. They purchased between Middlebury and Rutland. They purchased, working with the Friends of Otter Creek, this was in Otter Creek, Vermont, and purchased up a lot of open space, provided storage for the floodwaters to go to, as they left Rutland and started heading for Middlebury. And during the hurricane of Irene, what normally you would see as you move downstream on a river, and Jack can verify this, you usually see an increase in flow. You see an increase in cubic feet per second. What happened is it hit Rutland. The town of Rutland was 30 miles upstream. They had 15 to 16,000 cubic feet per second. That did severe damage to the town of Rutland. In the town of Middlebury, as it moved through these areas where they had put in all this storage and it actually made room for the river and bought up a lot of the open space, it reduced the peat flow down to 8,000 CFS, which was a 50% reduction. They had very limited damages. What it meant for the two towns is the town of Middlebury only had some minor damage to one of their bridges, whereas the town of Rutland, pretty much their downtown business area was devastated. They are now looking to the state to come in to build more structural levees and stronger bridges and actually channelize the river even more, whereas in the town of Middlebury, they're not having to do that because they got this great reduction in flows. So that's just kind of an example of how these protection of open space can help. But what do you do to value these natural resources? And how do you come up with a value or a monetary value that can be used to compare why we should prevent these resources from being used? Some of the evaluation methods are avoiding costs. So like I just showed you, flood damages. You avoid those damages by preserving your open space. You get an avoided cost benefit. Replacement costs, like I showed you with the detention basin. If you use up storage space, you have to replace it with something, and there's a construction cost or a cost involved in that. Other things are travel costs, how far do you have to go to enjoy the benefits of open space or recreation. Those are factored in on when people travel for recreation or for, like, the downtown Riverwalk and walking has eliminated some travel costs for people because people actually go there instead of pass points to another location or some distance away. There's HEDOC, hedonic pricing, which I don't know a lot about, so I'm not going to try to get into that too much. But market pricing, you actually look at what market values are for the land and the property values, et cetera, they're used at that. And then there's contingent evaluation. The examples of some of these would be the cost of storage, and we talked about the cost of building a water treatment plant in place of forest filtration. This is in the case in Seattle where they actually bought up an entire water, they have a whole watershed. So instead of having to build a water treatment plant, they did this back in like 1890 at a cost of about $500 million. They bought this watershed. The cost now would be in $5 billion, and it would also entail the cost of building a water treatment plant, which they did not have to build because that actual forested watershed acts as their filtration. So we're able to save those costs, which would be an avoided cost. Improvement in watershed health leads to an increase in commercial recreational salmon catch. Again, this is something that happens in the Northeast. By improving the health of, and rehabilitation of the channels in the watershed, they get better fisheries. We have some of the similar situation happen here in Milwaukee with the improvements in the fisheries in Milwaukee Harbor. We're starting to see more and more recreation, more and more people coming to enjoy fishing. That improves the business and commercial investments in the Milwaukee area, and people start to show up here as a destination. And then again, what visitors are willing to pay to visit a location or a place. If you preserve enough or if you have enough of these recreation outlets, people actually come to visit you instead of leaving your location and place themselves. And then also the increased home value, the increase in property values, as we've seen in downtown Milwaukee, I think, with the Shoreward example, where you start to do some interesting things, improve some of your natural resources, the resources you have in your community, you begin to see increases in your property values. So what do? You look at some of the things you want, you take flood protection. These are the things that benefit society: flood protection, gas and climate regulation, pollination, soil erosion. You begin to look at the different types of land that you have in your community. And you put them in rivers and lakes, wetlands, riparian. There's a whole host of others, agriculture, recreation, what open space do you have left, prairie, immature woodlands, mature woodlands. You can list them. And going to the left, you can add more. I'm just going to show these three. And again, you look at these different values that they supply. Next slide. You begin to find, go through the literature, you can find what is the value. This is per acre for each of these. So you begin to look at what the value per acre is. You begin to tally it up. And then sometimes it's all over the map. You can see you've got $199 per acre as opposed to $2,100 here. So you have to be careful when you're going through the literature to be sure that you get a good apples-to-apples comparison. You usually throw out the high and low, or you come up with averages for these. And sometimes that vocal backwards. But sometimes you don't have a lot of information. And that's one of the weaknesses that we have for this whole process right now. We don't have enough studies that show what is the actual cost or the value of some of these factors that we have. And we don't have that information for all areas of the country. And it's something that we're working on right now. There are a lot of projects. There's a lot of foundations that are very interested doing studies to try to determine what these values are using the valuation methods that we talked about. And you also have to be very careful with valuation methods. All of these things can be biased. So you have to be very sure that you're rigorous in your studies to be sure that you don't come up with an overinflated value. Excellent. You take this, you put it into a computer program, and let's say you look at just the total value of the rivers and lakes in an area. We've come up to take these three, end up with a price of $77 per acre for each year. So each year you maintain those rivers and lakes in good standing, you get about $77 per acre per year. So you put this down the rivers and lakes, and you can use an equation. This is the equation that they have put this through. You add up over the annual ecosystem service value for each of these land use methods. When you hit this, you tally up the acres, tally up the low values, you tally up the high values, so you can go. And again, this was for the entire Middle Cedar River watershed. They had a total of $547 million to almost $2 billion in value of their natural resources. So that's with the high of each year. If you put a 4% discount rate over 400 years, did everybody know what a discount rate is? One of the things we don't like using, I don't like the 4% discount rate. I think it should be zero, which would actually increase these values, but 4% is what the federal government uses for their built infrastructure. So we're trying to be conservative. And what the 4% means, you decrease in value over every year, over 100 years, you'll decrease about 4% of value. In a natural system, the one thing about a natural system that has an advantage over a built system is it doesn't decrease in value. In fact, with the loss of open space and resources, you actually see an increase in value, unfortunately. The economic models that we have today don't allow you to use a negative discount rate. It's just not, I'm not an economist, so I just don't know. So what you can do is you can end up valuing your open space and your resources by looking at these valuation systems. And this can be done. And they are doing some of it in Wisconsin. They're going to do the Rock River in Wisconsin coming up in the next probably year or so. I'm going to be one of the advisors on that study. I'm really interested to see it. I am not an economist. So a lot, some of this stuff I'm still in the process of learning. But what it does is it gives you an idea that if you lose, when you start to lose, when you start to develop, I shouldn't say lose, when you develop open space or you develop your resources, it really gives you a better way of comparing what you're actually losing or what you're trading for that development as opposed to the resources you're giving up. So you have a real honest appraisal. This was the value of that resource, and this is what I'm going to be getting with this development. And you can make a better decision. Do we really want to do that development in this location? Or would it be better in some other location where we're not losing so much of these values that we can actually start to put a dollar through? I think it's a real fascinating study. This presentation is usually an hour long, but I didn't want to give you guys that to put all you guys in. But I think it really has some value to start thinking about, because Franklin in Milwaukee County is one of the last. We didn't put a lot of open space. And we have tremendous numbers of resources. I've always, when you look at our map, we have lots of floodplains in our community. And to a lot of people, they have no value because you can't develop in that floodplain. And I would say that may be incorrect. We may be able to find, if we come up with new economic models, that there might be high value in those floodplains because they protect the people to the south of us in the scene, and they have a value of flood protection and flood storage. And it's just how we value those things might make us think a little bit differently. Thanks. You got any questions?
Yeah, I just, as you were talking, I'm thinking your presentation actually should be used for economic development. The Ford Franklin Committee and the staff should try and fit that into the economic package, the development package. We really haven't used it, and it's a tremendous, it should be like a magnet for bringing in certain types of people that are interested in it. And the second thing is, the way I'm looking at this, it would be like if you took the lakefront and you eliminated that and put housing on it, well, the people that came and built that are living in those high rises right now, right on the bluff, a major reason they came in there and they invested in that was so that at the end of the day, they could go down, take a bike ride, have the beach close to them, all of that. So you develop the lakefront, and you're actually you're going in the opposite direction. You're basically turning people off.
Yeah, what they like to point out is this is not actually anti-development. What it does is you want to have, and I hate the term smart growth, but it gives you reasons to put development in areas where it makes sense. And keep areas open where it makes sense that there's a high value.
Well, I mean,
and the lakefront is a big one.
Well, in the Central Park in New York, yeah. I mean, it was they purposefully cut that path in there. And I'm sure there were many, many people that wanted that to go for development. I can't even imagine what the value of that is. But if it wasn't for the Central Park, I'd say the prices that they're asking for the apartments and the condos along there would be much less.
And the other thing they talk about is the city owns lots of open space. We have parks and then develop parks. Right now, the value of that land, if you out on the Northeast, they're beginning to use that as bond. Well, the community can take their open space. If you use it just for the property value, it may not be very high. I mean, like and show some great slides about what's the best use of this land. If you put in a big shopping center, you're going to get so much per square foot. If it remains as open space, you're going to get so many square foot, a dollar per square foot. But if you start to use this valuation method and it becomes acceptable to banks, you can show that that open space has a value higher than the actual cost of the land. You can use it for bonding to get money and borrow money against it. They're doing that with some of the utilities. You know, I don't know, Wisconsin, again, not an economist. I've been told Wisconsin laws for how municipalities and super municipalities and counties can do bonding. This would, might not be allowed, but like the county parks could bond their parkways, which were have a lot of value, particularly for flood storage. You can then bond against that and use that as an asset much greater than the value of the property. So a lot of things have to change before this becomes more acceptable in mainstream economics, but it is beginning to get some traction because there are values here, and as we lose this open space, we see these values.
Well, I was explaining to, there's a couple folks that Jack and I met with earlier this week. It was yesterday. There's a lot of stuff going on here. they were going to be here today to listen to your presentation because they're very interested in Franklin and talking to us about kind of like being the poster boy for sustainability. That's a big
international program.
And they were going to be here today. They're probably going to, I suggested that they contact. And it has to do with connectivity and bike paths and sustainability and all that. So I suggested that they contact Kevin and Mr. Fowler and Mr. Micklick. It looks like it's a match made in heaven. They were referred to us by a guy named Kevin Schaefer. So it has to do with, you know, that I wanted us to, again, be the poster child for good water quality initiatives. And you know, we've got that area of land out there, and let's try and do it right. And then it falls right in place with what you're talking about. That's that having development that's in harmony. In fact, they loved it when I said harmony.
You're the director.
Their whole program is called Harmony. And bringing in development that's in harmony with the natural resources versus seeing it as a obstacle.
And they're really interested in how this is perceived. This is the first time you guys are the first real local community outside of the Cedar watershed that's gotten this. This presentation has been made to federal agencies, much longer. And from my perspective, I think sometimes it's wasted on the feds because they don't have the land use decision. If the land use decision making is made here, even though the Wisconsin State Legislature may think they're going to tell us how to do it, we will always develop this. But this is where the rubber hits the road to make land use decisions.
Jack, yeah.
And today I had TAT today. That's the technical advisory team for the sewage district, and they are now allotting $2 million to the communities for green infrastructure. It's going to be divvied out just like BPII was, a private property, which means we get about 4% of that, which would be about $80,000. So, and with no match, so as long as we do green infrastructure, we can spend that money for green infrastructure.
What's your definition?
Well, it's pretty broad, but green infrastructure would be rain barrels, would be rain gardens, bio swales,
green roof,
maybe land set aside, which would.
It's mostly related to stormwater at this point, would you agree?
Yeah.
So it's really a stormwater green infrastructure. So anything that would retain the stormwater on your property, preventing it becoming flood water, detriment to your neighbors. You keep it on your property. You come up with systems on your property, either through not developing all the property that you have, or by doing the development in such a way that the stormwater is, can be, infiltrated. infiltrated into the soil below your property. Unfortunately, Wisconsin, because of our soil types, that's not always the best. That without a lot of capital investment, actually removing some of the clay soils and allowing for more storage. But it's really targeted at stormwater. Whereas this, what I'm talking about is a general overall policy shift of economics to look at all types of open space, flooding, recreational. There's many different values that you can have for your open space. And again, I really don't think it's anti-development. I really think it's just about really getting development to think about when we develop land, we should really be developing those lands that are best suited for what we want the development to be. And what are we actually trading for that development? I don't think we always get a true understanding of that orange to apple comparison. It's not apples to apples. It's really, we have these values here, and then you have this development. And some development is very good. I think what they've done, like in Bayshore and the downtown Milwaukee, what they've done with the bylaws is very successful. And like the mayor said about the lakefront, if someone had the foresight of some of our county civic leaders back then, and the parklands, preserving those parklands was a huge fight to prevent that from being developed. We didn't have those. I think the flood damages that we suffered in 97, 98, 2000, 2011, not here in Primer, but in other areas associated with this would have been a lot worse.
Well, I like the thing about the travel, you know, that why travel if you have all of these amenities in your backyard? So there's a real value. It's a different way of looking at it.
So, but again, I think we want to hone this down for a local perspective so that it can be given to local city councils and economic development. I'm kind of a lone voice even in this organization where I'm not so keen. Federal policy is great, but having sat on this planning commission for a long time and watching how decisions are made on land use, I think really the message needs to get to that local. And it's very difficult because you have, I think, over 35,000 municipalities and local boards in the state of Wisconsin. I think that's the number I've heard of this year. I think it's 35,000. That's a lot of ice if you go to the presentation. But there it is. Thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. A round of applause.
Any suggestions you have for improving that? I'd love to hear them.
Popcorn.
Thanks, man.
I'll bring popcorn.
And Jack, you stayed awake.
I sit awake.
Okay, City of Franklin Plan Commission tour of Oakland Avenue Village should have presentation. Village of Shorewood, the master plan, all that. They're trying to work out the logistics and the open meetings law and all that is.
Can we get the lights again? I'm sorry, I'm
sure.
Not a presentation. Oh. Just all verbal.
Just proving a challenge. We've been working with the city attorney and trying to figure out how we go and do this. The village manager, President Johnson, is willing to meet us. Is it the 10th?
Yep. June 1st at 10:30.
Okay.
At the Altera Coffee Shop on
what time?
10:30 in the morning. June 1st, 10:30 in the morning at the Altera Coffee Shop. It's at the corner, the northeast corner of Kensington and Oakland. And so the village president will be leading the tour. He may have some city staff, village staff along with him as well, but he'll be leading the tour. Rain or shine, only if there's severe weather would it be canceled and rescheduled for some other time.
June 1st is a
Saturday. Yeah, Saturday morning. So it's not this coming Saturday, it's the next one. It'll be a walking tour. If there's anything in particular that we're aware of, he's more than open to focus on something. But he's got enough stuff to keep us busy for an hour and a half to talk about if we don't bring up anything. We plan on just getting there on our own, however you want to, and then we meet at the coffee shop, and then he'll meet us there, and then we'll just go from there. He'll be talking about the bid that they created, the TIF that they have, the redevelopment that they've already conducted. Some buildings torn down, new ones put up, other buildings rehabbed, streetscaping, all those kinds of things. And he'll have real examples that he'll be able to point to.
Yeah, and it's.
And he was excited to do this.
I mean, just what I saw, a guy took me on a tour. It must have been December or something like that. It was really cold. But I was just absolutely amazed at what they had accomplished down there. And we have quite a few areas in Franklin, I think, that would be ripe for this type of development. There's spots like, let's see, what is that? 37th and Ross in the north side of the street. So it's kind of like a junkyard in the back. It's next to Casa de Paso, the whole area. That would be one area. But there's quite a few, I think, in the city. Where the houses are across from McDonald's on Ross, that something is eventually going to go in there. Some kind of redevelopment. And St. Martin's very nice for this. But the people that they were able to attract to that community, because they not only changed the whole paradigm of what they were doing, but I think some of the people on penthouses.
It's mixed zoning with residents above the businesses.
Yeah, but there's some pretty nice places down there, and the reason that they're down there is because they can go to Altera Coffee, they can go to this restaurant, they can go to that restaurant. It's all very close, and the biking is a part of it. And it had a lot to do with the involvement of the business community and the commitment. I think what you're going to hear is about the bid district that they established. And so I was really impressed. I just think there's, Franklin's so large. Is it going to be a fit for the whole community? No. Some of the areas in Franklin?
Yeah.
In fact, now that I think about it, across from the Bowery, that old liquor store that's there, and then there's a few other things. Yeah, there's a few spots. So I guess the thing I'd like to have you hear is, how did they do this? And maybe later on have the members of CDA or Ford Franklin come down and take a look at it. We're actually going to do this.
I'd be really interested in that Bid and Tiff area, because I see the development that's going on in the Rock in that area with the parkway and the Root River right there as a destination. That's going to be, it's got that bike trail. They're going to be developing a BMX bike. Hopefully, I walked over there. It's not important. Well, anyway.
We got a city van if you want. It could be here.
But I like the idea that when that eventually gets developed, it's that whole area, that 76 and Rossin, going east along Rossin and then going south along 76 Street, has some potential if you get a place, a destination place that it could become with the Root River, with the ski hill, and this baseball park. I think it has the potential to be a destination.
Well, I think there used to be a Century in Greendale. There was, because it was a shop. It's not there anymore. And then there was a Century over in Hales Corner. And those are no longer grocery stores. Maybe some of our older retail centers, maybe they need to be retrofitted. Add a couple more floors, build in some clientele for them, and then bring them, cook that into some of amenities. So I tip my hat to Guy Johnson and the people in Shore. I think they just did a fantastic job. Hopefully you will too. Altera Coffee, I suppose.
Jim Bartnicki.
Yeah, sure.
There's a beer guy right across the park.
Is it the Brook Beer?
That's Brook Park.
Yeah. Oh.
That's one of the advantages that they have is their whole western edges.
Isn't the mayor going to buy a round room?
The mayor's buying a problem. I'm driving.
I lose my hearing very well.
We got a van. We can take a van load down.
I
if you're going to do that, we need to let Jesse know right away, because then he'll probably have to revise the notice. Because once a majority of you guys get together, we have to post it.
Well, I think you'd have to do that.
But if we do cars separately, then we're just saying to the public, we're meeting at the coffee shop. If anybody wants to participate, they can meet us there too.
Yeah, this has really been quite a challenge.
Yeah. Jesse's also said if a majority gets in a vehicle together, we don't have to advertise it. But if somebody asks, I want to be in that vehicle too, we have to accommodate them.
Well, we have a bad key notice, so if others show up, they show up. I mean, it's conceivable that all the aldermen can show up.
That's a good point. If you know you're bringing family or friends or coworkers or something like that, let me know. The village president would like a ballpark figure of how many people we think might show up.
Okay. Well, and as I already told you, I'll be there right on time, I hope, but I've got the library appreciation breakfast that morning at 8 o'clock, 8:30, so I'm going to go there and then I'll shoot out. But,
individuals can't carpool. That's not recommend.
More than two, no. Then we have to post. You
can't. Irony. It's ironic. Can't carpool to see a walkable development.
Well, let's post it and let me know if you want to ride.
Yeah. I'd be interested in carpooling if we could. Yeah.
I mean, I got a city van.
Who's
going to
drive?
What?
No,
I can drive. I can drive. You guys want to take your life in your own hands.
All right. Anything on this?
Thanks for sending us up.
Well, have you met Guy Johnson?
I have met him.
Yeah. Given my kind of my background and who I hang out with and who he hangs out with, it's kind of unusual that the two of us are pretty well. He's the treasurer of the ICC too. I think he's a very special guy. The community is really lucky to have him. So, okay, Complete Streets Connectivity Committee status.
We walked the trail, found a lot of ticks this time.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, it was. We had MMSD representation, DNR representation. Any other organization there, Nick? That was pretty much.
No, I think just
MMSD
and DNR.
And the main thing was. Sewerbeck. Sewerbeck. And the main thing was to look at the different crossing options. Obviously, they judge it with regard only to minimum impact. They don't make a safety, utility, or anything else determination. So we got their input. A good example of what Commissioner Fowler is talking about. I think if we do this trail right, minimum impact, maximum value for that land, because the real value of that land is to abate the flooding and to suck up the water. And now we've got a recreational value to it. Something that the representative from MMSD said that we may have to bring before the Environmental Commission is he suggested we mow the area once yearly or once every 2 years.
The whole area?
Mow the area.
If I could, John, I've actually been working with, I talked to Jerry Schaefer, I called, I don't, if this is off topic, I will stop. But I called the Parks Commission. And I'd like to get this on, I'm asking to put this on the planning agenda for next June 6th, I'm asking for it. Because I talked to Jerry, and I gave him a plan, what needs to be done.
Okay.
You know, works for it. Yes, I do. Well, we were talking about who needs to, where that has to go, and how, and I talked to the attorney about where we need to go.
You could talk to the czar.
And I could talk to Jerry.
So that was the main thing we learned, was that if left on its own, it's just going to become overgrown and it won't be what it is anymore. It'll become a invasive species will take over and things like that. There's some manner of maintenance that has to be done. We don't want to have a fire. That's the other option. So mowing.
Mowing and herbicide.
And then we meet again on the 10th if we can muster a quorum. That's it.
Okay. I'm under the impression that you need another.
other aldermanic
representative. We need an aldermanic representative.
You do it.
Yes.
And then that would be it?
I think that's the hole we have to fill is a new aldermanic.
There's also a citizen member vacancy to advisory committees.
Yeah. Well, if there are names of individuals that you think would help to help your cause, that you know, instead of being guessing. I don't know, a lot of the aldermen are sort of getting them on everything. So.
Hmm. There's a vacancy in this one, too.
Yeah. Okay, I'll. I didn't know that, I guess I just didn't follow that you had two aldermen. Is it two? Is it aldermanic or is it one?
I think it's just aldermanic. Correct.
Correct. Alderman Wilhelm is on the committee currently as an advisory position.
What would the other position be? Advisory as well.
Parliamentarian position.
Voting?
Non-voting.
So neither one of them come from the quorum?
No, they do not. That citizen member vacancy.
And I've been told that there's been like three meetings or something that there haven't been any meetings. But
the last meeting was March 6th.
But that's not because of not having enough members.
It's just people not being able to attend. One time it was my fault because it was during the big storm. And I stayed home to secure the basement.
Are you doing it regularly, or are you doing it at the call of the chair?
We have the regular meeting posted, and then we reschedule. Is that called call of the chair?
Yes, we've had two regular meetings canceled, and when they've been canceled, we've tried to reschedule.
Yeah, maybe you should just have them at the call of the chair.
The next one is June 5th or June 10th. I thought it was the 2 days.
I believe it was the 10th.
On a selfish basis, I mean, that's staff is, you know, we've got other things during the day for them to do. And then they, you know, if there's no meetings aren't going to occur, they, believe it or not, the staff are actually human beings. So they have families and things like that. So I mean, if, right, you've experienced that once or twice. So, I mean, if you can do it to call a chair, maybe have the meetings a little bit longer. That might work out better.
I'm willing to try anything.
Good. The gentleman that we met with yesterday would like to hear a lot about connectivity and the bike paths and sustainability. So, like I said, they were pretty happy to hear keep saying the words harmony and bike paths, and we're already working on them. And we're already doing this one. So, right? They just got to do whatever Jack tells them to do. Okay, motion to adjourn.
Go move.
Seconds, but moved and seconded. For discussion, seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries.